Alan Colley will join us with the latest transfer news. Shane Byrne will share his views on Ireland's defeat to the All Blacks. Plus, Greg Allen speaks to Graeme McDowell about the Liv controversy. You don't want to miss that one. If you want to get in touch, please text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. It has been an interesting weekend of hurling. We now know who's going to contest the All-Ireland final. It will be Kilkenny versus Limerick. And to talk us through the action over the weekend, I'm delighted to say that Limerick's Niall Moran joins us on the line, along with Richie Power from Kilkenny. Niall, to you first, because it felt like it was almost inevitable that Limerick were going to pull out that performance, and they were phenomenal when it really counted, especially in those last 5 minutes.
Yeah, I suppose all the clutch moments in the game, Limerick probably came up from there in the last 5 minutes. A couple, obviously, great catch at the end by Kyle and one previous set by Sean. And look, I don't think anything was inevitable. There's never anything inevitable when you go to play a championship game in a semi-final, especially at the level these two teams are operating at. But I suppose it's probably a mark of champions coming down the home stretch. And I suppose, look, one thing that maybe Galway probably needed somebody to land the plane just as they were coming down in the last 5 or 6 minutes. And I suppose it was the first time really where you'd say that the loss of Joe Canning was immense. A couple of clutch moments that you'd kind of think that a guy of his stature, legendary status, that he may have made that catch at the end or may have finished one or two of those balls that Cam hit. And for Limerick then, I suppose that experience came to the fore. So there was nothing inevitable about it, Marisha. They're a very, very hard one. And I'll tell you, we're under no illusions here in Limerick how hard they are to get to finals, and most definitely how hard they are it's going to be to win the final.
Well, what I meant, Niall, was that the performance was inevitable. We were going to see that Limerick at some stage, I felt. I just didn't know when, and as it turned out, it was at a really important stage, which was an All-Ireland semi-final. And it's like those conversations we were having at the start of the year. They feel like a long time ago when we saw what they were able to produce yesterday, which wasn't perfect, but it was definitely on track to that perfection that we have seen regularly.
Oh no, incrementally their performance have improved. I suppose the narrative has been that Limerick are so far ahead of the chasing pack and all that, but I don't think that has ever really been the case. No different when Kilkenny and Richie there beside you were winning All Irelands. There was lots of days when teams put them to the pin of their collars, and sometimes that kind of gets lost in folklore. But maybe one of the criticisms that was labelled at Limerick maybe earlier in the year was maybe the depth of the panel. And I suppose even on a personal level, I would have felt that certain guys could be needed to push on a little bit more. And I definitely yesterday, to be able to have the bench impact that they had. And again, I know it's cliched, but I think everybody who knows Limerick hurling and would be so thrilled for David Reedy. He was kind of one of the guys who seems to be getting a little bit of the kind of some of the negative comments that were thrown in Limerick earlier in the year. David tends to be the person who's getting him, and ultimately because he always tended to be the guy who showed for ball. And sometimes when you're showing for ball and always looking for work, and sometimes you make mistakes and you get punished for them. But yesterday, again, he went showing for it, and it just set his way. And as I said, anybody who knows Davey Reedy, he's a great character, he's a great guy, he'd be one of the most popular fellas in that panel. I think everyone was delighted that after probably he's nearly 10 years in and out this day for me, that he had finally had his moment of individuality in the sun.
Is he nearly 10 years in there? I was looking at him in the post-match interview.
He was only a garçon who came in. I was probably coming near the end of mine, 13. I remember after the Munster final trying to nurse him into a pint, but it transpired that he'd lost experiences of drinking pints anyway. But he's a great guy.
Yeah, I was just thinking he looked really, really young, but obviously he has been around for a while. Well, Richie Power is with us as well. Richie, with your Kilkenny hat on, what did you think of Limerick yesterday?
I suppose, look, Marie, they really showed what true champions are all about. You know, when it came down to the, as Niall mentioned there, the last 5 or 6 minutes, you know, they had that experience, I suppose, to get them over the line. And, you know, they were really put to the pin of their collar yesterday by, you know, a great Galway performance, but yet they came up with the goods at the end. And that, as I said, it just shows real, I suppose, guts and, I suppose, will and want to win. And, you know, they still have it after, you know, they're going for 4 All-Irelands in 5 years, which is an incredible record. And look, they're going to be a formidable opposition in the final. And I suppose, look, it's something that Brian and the lads will really kind of relish and look forward to.
Yeah, they were pretty awesome, and it is, I think, a final that is totally mouth-watering as well. Niall, just on Limerick before we move to the Saturday game, where are the areas that you think that they need to improve, and how much work do you think that Cian Lynch and Peter Casey need to do?
Well, I suppose the first thing that you say, Marie, is like Limerick probably, after going 6-1 up, probably went a little bit limp in the sense that they never probably push on and drove on, and at times it's been probably a trade of theirs. So secondly, Galway will have regrets in terms of the positioning. Carl Mannion, at the start, he was just kind of, he didn't really know where to position himself, but the minute he moved into a more central position in around the middle between the 265s, he got on the world of ball. And I think if I was buying Cody looking in at yesterday, I'd be thinking, well, I have a guy like Adrian Mullen, a guy who likes to drift, who's capable of taking scores at long range and distance. I think that you will see probably a situation where Kilkenny will try and maybe free him up because they have that ability to shoot from distance. And I suppose finally we're bringing in the two guys they're talking about, like Keane and Peter. Like, nobody really knows what physical shape they're in. As in, everybody makes the assumption that these guys are 100%, but that was Peter's first game in nearly 12 months. We don't know the severity of Keane's injury, and I suppose with that in mind, my personal preference, not that it matters for anything, is that I would think that Limerick's balance is a little bit off at the moment, and I still feel that Limerick are strongest maybe with Kyle at half-back, and whether that's Dan or Mike Casey or whoever at full-back, but just when you have Kyle at half-back, I think that they have a mass. He has to be marked as a half-back, and if it, like on Saturday's game, Adrian Mullen went straight out to that right or the right half-forward position on Paddy Fitzpatrick, and Paddy was a little bit lost, but I think if the same thing were to happen against Limerick, if Kyle Hayes had found himself drifting into that midfield area, I think Kenny would be on the back foot straight away. So that's my personal preference, but again, that doesn't count for very much.
It's great to have those options anyway, and like the players that you name, like any team would want them in any position, really, just absolutely super hurlers. Richie, looking at Galway, have Galway shown now how to get all, where you can get at Limerick? Because they did so many things right. The first few minutes I thought maybe it might end up a bit like Saturday's game, but they were able to get themselves back into the game and give such a brilliant account of themselves right up until that 70 minutes. They didn't have the composure maybe for the additional time that Galway had, but they really gave a brilliant account of themselves.
Oh, absolutely, Marie. And I know Henry would be very, very proud of the players, but also, I suppose, utterly disappointed on the other side of it, because you know they put themselves in such a great position to win the game. So I think, look, from looking in from the outside, yeah, that they're probably after showing, you know, the likes of Kilkenny where to maybe get at Limerick, or you know, I think with this Limerick team, you just need to be, you need to match them physically, and you need to be in their face, and you need to, I suppose, go at them from minute one. And so that's where Galway probably fell down yesterday, because the poor start that they had, you know, like, I suppose I look back to 2019 when Kilkenny beat Limerick in the semi-final, like the last time they were beaten in Championship. But I think that's what Kilkenny did from the word go. They really outfought them. They nearly outphysicality physicality-wise, you know, with Limerick. And Kilkenny are going to have to bring that and an awful lot more in 2 weeks' time if they want to, I suppose, dethrone the champions.
Yeah, it's a tough task. But looking at them on Saturday night, it feels as well, Niall, that they weren't perfect either, that they will have learned an awful lot from that Clare game, although they were awesome. I think just that expectation wasn't there heading into the game. There was so much focus on Clare. People were already almost expecting a Clare-Limerick All-Ireland final, repeated the Munster final, that Kilkenny kind of were able to wait in that long grass a little bit and came out then all guns blazing and were able to expose Clare's weaknesses. And it was quite interesting even just to hear Brian Cody talking about that 4 week break and how much it had benefited his team.
Yeah, obviously, look, again, those 4 weeks, they came out a very different side than what they were from the Leinster final. But I suppose sometimes, look, even in terms of the prime time showing that Munster games tended to get even throughout the year, most of the Munster games tended to be on terrestrial television on a Sunday, whereas you found that the Leinster Championship games were played at kind of awkward times on a Saturday, like many of them probably on Sky. So straight away, people's attention and narrative was drawn to what they'd seen, which meant that they probably hadn't seen a lot of Kilkenny. But like, even in the prelude to the match, I think when you actually put them, if you were to pick the best 15 out of both Clare and Kilkenny, you were still going to have 10 or 11 Kilkenny lads on it. And I think it's just actually when you pair it back like that and look at the quality in the backs of Hugh Lawler, Paddy Deegan, Tommy Walsh, and then up front, like, besides even the Ballyhale boys, straight away you know that they have quality. And again, I suppose, look, the first 20 minutes, they were awesome, but Clare obviously had a kind of a day whereby they malfunctioned as well, Marie, and I suppose the balance probably lies somewhere in between. But this Kilkenny team definitely think, and probably in their own heads would feel, that they are well equipped and far better than Limerick. And like, I think it's actually going to be a final for the ages. I know that's cliched every year, but I think this has the ring of Tipperary, Kilkenny, not 9, not 10, all about it. I think it's really going to make itself up for one of the classic finals.
Yeah, it's definitely one I'm looking forward to, and no doubt all hurling fans will be as well. Richie, that malfunction, as it's been described, that Clare malfunction, how do you explain it just from a Tipperary perspective? Was it a case that they just weren't able to, Clare weren't able to play the game they wanted to, or was it that they weren't prepared for Kilkenny and what they were going to bring?
I think probably a bit of both, Marie. You know, like, I suppose my big question mark, I suppose, with regards to Clare in the build-up to Saturday's game was, could they bring the same intensity that they brought to the two Limerick games? And I suppose if Kilkenny were wearing a green jersey Saturday night, would their performance have been different? You know, because Clare always seem to up their performance to play against Limerick. Obviously, next door neighbours, the rivalry that's there. And there wouldn't have been that with Kilkenny. There was no rivalry. There's no kind of, I won't say bad blood, but, you know, there was no real classics Kilkenny-Clare games over the past number of years. So I just felt it was going to be difficult for Clare to reach those heights. And they really needed to, because I knew what Kilkenny were going to bring. No matter what, you know, performance Kilkenny put in under Brian, you're always going to get, you know, work rate, savagery, you know, physicality. And they brought that in buckets on Saturday night. And Clare just didn't have any answers to it. And, you know, I suppose if we said going out Saturday night that Tony Kelly wouldn't score from play, Peter Duggan wouldn't score from play, you know, you'd be very, very confident that you'd get the victory. And I suppose that's how it transpired.
I wouldn't have believed you, actually, Rich, if you'd said that now.
No, and I like, as I said, yeah, like, could anyone see Tony Kelly going 70 minutes? You know, but, you know, you have to give great credit to Mikey Butler, who was outstanding, you know, that never give him a minute's peace. And, you know, I suppose that's what you need to do to take out the best players in the game.
Now, it also helps when TJ Reid is at his absolute best.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the older he gets, me, he seems to get better. And I suppose maybe one of the things I said about Galway was they had nobody to land the plane. But like, TJ is like your man Sully in that famous film, "The Land of the Plane Abroad in the Hudson." He always comes up with those big clutch moments at the very, very end. And that's the one thing for Limerick. Like, as in I said, they have gone limp in games, and okay, they found themselves level going down the home stretch. But if they find themselves going limp against Kilkenny, they'll find themselves 3 or 4 points down, kind of something similar maybe to what we had in 19. So like, the lessons are there, but like, there's some interesting options for Kilkenny. Does Walter Watt start the next day? Looks very, very sharp. Does John Donnelly start again? He's a guy who I would have felt that if they brought him on earlier in 18, we wouldn't have beaten him above in Thurles. So like, there's some huge questions to be answered from both teams, and I think both managements will definitely have a lot to ponder more so than any game, because they have guys in their subs who are capable of crippling the opposition.
Yeah, you're right as well. And isn't it a great position to be in when you do have these selection headaches as well, and both managers will, because they have options, which is exactly what you want heading to an All-Ireland final. But you have to make the right call too. And I think for Clare as well, Richie, just John Conlon, it just felt like he was going to be a massive loss. The minute I saw him walking around the pitch, you could tell he wasn't moving freely, and he played such a pivotal role, not just from a hurling point of view, but from a leadership point of view as well. And when you're going up against a team like Kilkenny, you can't be without players like that. Well, you're going to struggle anyway if you are.
Oh yeah, like, and you could see it from the throw-in, Marie, how much of a loss John was. And as you mentioned there, with regards to leaders, Clare lacked leaders Saturday night, which I found surprising, you know, in an All-Ireland semi-final. And you know, they're trying to get back to an All-Ireland for the first time since 2013, so definitely John was a huge loss. And I suppose, look, you don't wish that on anyone. You know, semi-finals are there to, I suppose, it's probably the worst game to lose, because everything is at stake. You have the All-Ireland final, but your season's ended then after a semi-final. And, you know, unfortunately, that was the case for John. And hopefully the injury isn't as serious, which will kind of keep him out of maybe club action going forward.
So we do have an All-Ireland final to look forward to now, Limerick and Kilkenny, and a lot of the talk now, Niall, is about 2019 and that semi-final, and whether Limerick will be thinking about it or not. What do you reckon?
I honestly just think, look, I 19, it has to be put to the back of the mind. So we have 43 years talking about 1973 or whatever, 40 years. We have a lot enough talking about Limerick and Kenny finals and whether Eddie Kerr, would Limerick have beaten him if Eddie Kerr had played. But I look, honestly, for this Limerick team, I one of the things that was thrown maybe at Clare, as Richie said there, was did they bring the same passion, the intensity? I'm not so sure that Limerick have come into any game this year whereby they have been emotionally psyched up beyond, I didn't get to that level of emotional intensity, that peak, and I honestly think you're going to see that for this game against Kilkenny. It's a chance to win the three in a row. Limerick as a county has never done it. Outside the top three hurling counties, no other county has ever done it. And I suppose really, would it cement their place as one of the great teams in hurling history? It definitely would, and I think maybe to do it against Kingpins, Kilkenny. But again, that's easy talk. It's a huge, huge challenge. And honestly, I just think it's set up. You'll be so excited at the prospect of it from 2 weeks out.
Yeah, and Richie Brian Cody would definitely have something to say about that as well.
Yeah, he will, Maria. And you know what? This is a game and a final that Brian will really relish for the next 2 weeks. And you know, I've no doubt that they have the players back in tonight, and you know they're fully focused on Limerick. And look, I think Niall is right. I think this could be a final for the ages, and I think Limerick will be really, really, you know, emotionally up for this game because, as Niall mentioned there, just beating Kilkenny, they haven't done it on their way to their previous All Ireland. So you know, they'll see that, and I think 2019 will have a little bit of bearing here. I think. It's in Limerick's minds since 19 that they want to crack at Kilkenny. They wanted them for the last couple of seasons and they didn't get them, and I suppose now they have them. So, you know, we're really looking forward to it in Kilkenny, and, you know, it is definitely the two best teams in the country are in the final, and that's what you want to see.
Yep, it really is, even if one of them isn't Clare. Well, Richie and Niall, thank you so much for joining me. We will spend a lot of the next few weeks building up to this game as well. Looking forward to it, and I will talk to you soon. Now, welcome back. It's time to turn our attention to golf. Well, a little bit earlier, Greg Allen caught up with Graham McDowell at the JP McManus Pro-Am. He spoke to him about the Saudi Arabian-backed breakaway LIV Golf Series and what being in Adair Manor with JP McManus means to him.
This is a celebration of golf these 2 days. This is a celebration of a family that are obviously extremely special here in Limerick and obviously the island of Ireland. And, you know, as golfers, you know, you just look at the field here and you look at the pros and you look at the amateurs and celebrities that are supporting here. There's no focus on LIV. There's no focus on the negativity that's surrounding the game of golf. JP McManus has brought, you know, five tours together and, you know, some of the most important people in golf. Maybe the last time these people are together for a little while. And, you know, let's hope they can all sit down over a pint of Guinness tonight and maybe try and sort stuff out a little bit.
So when you took your spikes on, put them on this morning and walked out, did you expect there to be an atmosphere that might have been less welcoming?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. You know, I'm here maybe not feeling as celebratory and welcome as I was maybe 12 years ago last time I was here. I just won the US Open and, you know, it was a real celebration for me, but this time I'm obviously here under slightly more negative connotations, and I'm disappointed that that's kind of where we are in the world of golf. But you know, again, there's a, you know, obviously the consequences surrounding LIV and kind of all the negativity that's been spun. And you know, listen, the people were great to me this morning. I mean, I think two people maybe even mentioned it, and mostly they were just saying, I think you're making the right decision, you know. So Irish golf fans they're golf fans, you know. They love golf, and they're proud of their players, and I felt like they were still proud of me out there this morning.
So you've signed on the dotted line of LIV, and that's the decision is made. I know it was a tough decision for you. Did you expect there to be such blowback? And there's been considerable blowback, and you suffered it particularly at a press conference in the Centurion just over a week ago.
Yeah, I expected negativity, I expected consequences, but, you know, the sort of level of the, you know, how vitriolic the attacks have been, you know, pretty scary, really. You know, like I say, I can't jump on my social media without someone telling me to go die every day, you know, which is... it's pretty interesting, you know. At the end of the day, I'm just a pro golfer who's made a business decision that's based on money. I've never thought about where money comes from in 20 years out here, you know. And I mean, I've played in all parts of the world, you know, from China to the Middle East to all over Asia to South Africa to, you know, listen, I've never hyper-analyzed the morals and the ethics behind those dollar bills that I've made all, you know, my career. And, you know, this opportunity obviously has came with a huge negative spotlight over the Saudi regime. I mean, does that mean every person in Saudi Arabia is a bad person? The people running LIV Golf are bad people? No, they're not bad people. They're just trying to run a golf tour, and it's a very good one, and it's attracting some of the best players in the world.
So when you did sign on the dotted line for LIV, did you weigh up the human rights record in Saudi Arabia versus what you were taking, which was a business decision?
I acknowledged the things that have happened in Saudi Arabia. I've acknowledged their history and what the regime are responsible for. You know, and you have to put that to one side and realize that that's over there. This is professional golf over here, and we're not the only sport making money playing their sport in Saudi Arabia, Middle East. You know, we've spent lots and lots of time out there as part of the European Tour. They've been in the golf ecosystem since 2019. The European Tour brought these guys to the table. I won their tournament in 2020. You know, when that $1 million landed in my bank account, no one told me in my Twitter account that week to go die, you know. So, this is such a competitive threat. The narrative has been built around the fact that these guys should not be in golf. They should not be in sport, sports washing, all of the above, you know what I'm saying? And I get it. I get people's opinions. I get where they're coming from. But I think it's unfair that sits on my shoulders. It's unfair that it sits on any of the golfers' shoulders because, you know, we're just professional athletes that have made a living around the world for many, many years, and we certainly don't claim to try and solve any situations in any country at any point, you know, when we're out there playing.
So the accusation of sport washing, that you're contributing to it, and yet Saudi money has been in horse racing for more than 40 years. It's been in all facets of international trade. This country does 800 million euro worth of trade with Saudi Arabia. So you just regard this as being business, like that's business. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. I mean, there's some of the biggest countries in the world, from FedEx to MasterCard, you know, to just some massive companies that are doing business in Saudi Arabia, you know, Rolex and Apple. And, like, you know, this has been an unbelievable media negativity campaign that's been put together to try and make this look like the worst decision a golfer can make. And I'm not sure why we have been targeted over the last few months the way we've been targeted, because, like you say, of all the corporate, you know, industries around the world that do business in Saudi Arabia, to all the sports that have been involved in Saudi Arabia for so many years, why are we the ones carrying this burden and carrying this kind of this accusation that, you know, we should not be involved with these people? You know, I just, you know, it's been horrendous, it's been horrible, and I just, you know, can't wait for the day where we can start talking about something else, you know. But that day's not going to come for a little while. And you know, in the meantime, can't believe I'm even still talking about it here right now. You know, I should really learn from my mistakes and just say nothing, get on with it, you know, because that seems to be the only answer right now, is just to say no comment and hope for the best.
Yeah, but that's not you. You've always been forthcoming. Is there anything perhaps in that regard you have misjudged in the last while, or do you feel that that is part of what the whole bigger decision was like before you signed on the dotted line and you were ready to take these difficult questions?
Well, I mean, you know, you train and you get ready for the difficult questions, but in hindsight there is no answer to them. You know, I think that's probably my biggest regret, is trying to answer some hard questions in a logical manner when every word I say just gets absolutely torn apart, you know. So it's probably my only regret. Like I say, I knew the consequences. I knew kind of what to expect from a PGA Tour fallout, from a DP World fallout. I knew what was going to happen. I made my peace with that. The Ryder Cup stuff, disappointing, but I got to make my peace with it and see what happens. You know, when it comes to the media side of the stuff, I mean, I just had no idea that it was going to be quite this gruesome. And like I said, probably should just try and say less.
Probably it would be better if everybody in your position just said, it's for the money, it's not for growing the game, it's not for expanding the game. Is that kind of something that maybe everybody should actually just speak their mind?
For sure. I mean, you know, it's not in LIV Golf's interest for us to sit there and just say it's about the money. No one has denied that this is not a business decision. It is about the money, of course. But then we start talking about what LIV is and what they're trying to achieve. They're trying to take golf to markets around the world that haven't seen golf. They're trying to create a new product which is going to bring younger fans to the game. Like, that's all truth. But you can't say it because you just get ripped, because it's not about that. These guys said they're trying to grow the game.
You have a wife, you have a family at home in Northern Ireland. Is everybody, like, in your greater circle dealing with this because it has been a difficult time.
You know, listen, when I'm plastered on the front page of the Belfast Telegraph, do you think that makes my family happy? Because some guy from Amnesty International, I didn't respond to his comments. I mean, how am I supposed to respond to Amnesty International? Of course, like, that's not who I... Like, I'm not some peace ambassador, you know what I mean? I'm just a pro golfer who, you know, tries his best to do his job. Like, it's been a very difficult time, you know. It's probably me that kind of takes shit more personally than I should. My wife's been strong through it, you know. My folks, thankfully, have been in Florida, so they haven't really seen too much of the Irish press. It's hard, you know. It's been very difficult. And like I say, hopefully it'll pass soon and we can just continue to get on with what we're doing. There is room in the game for this product. Just got to work out kind of how it fits in with the PGA Tour and the DP World, probably specifically with them being the two biggest tours. We'll see. You know, obviously, Jay Monahan believes that there is no room, that it doesn't work, so, you know, and there's no coexisting going on. And what are the strategic alliance and Keith Pelley and the European Tour, they're going to have to try and agree with that as well. That's another one. So we'll see. Eventually, will we all just try and get on with our jobs and let guys have the ability to play wherever they want? Don't see that happening in my golfing lifetime, but that's the ultimate dream, the ultimate vision, where guys can be independent contractors and choose their own schedules.
So that was Graeme McDowell there speaking to Greg Allen a little bit earlier on. He was down at the JP McManus Pro-Am in Adair Manor. Gary Murphy joins me now on the line to look back over the weekend of golf and also to discuss GMAC's interview there. Gary, what were your thoughts on the points that he was making there about LIV and his association with it?
I think he's right in a lot of what he says. You know, there's professional sports people aren't going to fix political situations or what governments do or don't do. And I think, you know, governments and companies around the world do business every day, including our own, with the Saudis. So to say that, you know, this tour is, it's the guy's fault and all that sort of stuff, I think, you know, has been a little bit harsh on the players. I know Graeme came out kind of firing because the first interview he did, he was sat beside Dustin Johnson. It was obviously going to offer up, you know, very little, and Graeme kind of felt incumbent to carry the can, and he was just trying to be too clever because, unfortunately, everything he said was going to be wrong anyway, and he just got a little kind of befuddled with the whole thing. But you can just hear in his tone there, you know, how unprepared they all were for, you know, being kicked around like the political football. You know, we have a similar thing in on this island with Rory, you know, at times he's a political football, and guys aren't used to that because they're used to telling the truth, and unfortunately politicians are not that good at that. So I think it's probably taken a lot more out of him than he thought. But what he did say is that, you know, you got to move on. You know, there is a place for this tour, whether people like it or not. But the other side of that is, if guys do choose to play on this tour, they can't play on the other tours, and that's fair enough. You know, this letter that's gone into the DP World Tour about guys not being able to play in the Scottish Open, they shouldn't be allowed to play in the Scottish Open. So, you know, I think Porrick said it beautifully at the weekend as well. You know, you make your bed, you lie in it. So if you want to take the cash and go off and get on this tour, that's great and good luck to you. And I hope, you know, they'd do well, because I'm a big fan of Graeme McDowell's golf game. But you can't come back and play DP World Tour, PGA Tour. Just, you know, you can't play for Liverpool one weekend and Arsenal the following weekend. It just doesn't work like that.
I just found it very strange that he seems to be so hurt by it all, just given the views on Saudi Arabia and the information that we have, how he would be naive to think that there wasn't going to be a massive backlash and that his reputation wouldn't be tarnished by it because he's put himself front and centre. And it almost sounded like there when he was talking to Greg that he felt like he was a victim. And when you think of the country that he's now associated with through LIV and the victims that are over there, it just seems that he just doesn't seem to get the tone right.
Yeah, but they're coming on, they're drumming up this is against Saudi Arabia. It's not against Saudi Arabia, it's against the threat of the PGA Tour. That's why the backlash from the commentary in the States is it's all anti the Saudis. It's not about the Gulf, it's about Saudi Arabia, you know, on 9/11. Why did they invade Iraq if it was Saudi Arabia that did it? You know, so they're spinning this thing as it's a political, to twist the
I'm just surprised, Gary, that he seems so hurt and surprised by the backlash.
Yeah, but no one's, you know, social media is, you know, and Twitter have their spaces, but it doesn't matter who you are or what you are. If someone's saying they want to kill you because you're joining this league, like, that's not easy to take. Like, at the end of the day, it's a ball and grass. He's out playing golf. You know, he's a professional sports person. You know, who's our most famous footballer? If he goes playing football for Newcastle next year, he's not going to get any grief. Yet these guys, because they've gone on this tour, and the tour is a major threat to the PGA Tour and to the DP World Tour. But it's not a threat to society, I don't think. And it's been spun like it has. And, you know, there's a lot of vitriol out there about it. I'm not saying that I agree or disagree with the Saudi League. I think it was managed really badly by the people running the LIV Tour, you know, to throw those guys to the wolves, essentially, because it was a no-win situation for them. Of course, there's the business decision, and they're there for the money. Mm-hmm. You know, and good luck to them. They're professional sports people if they're in a situation, you know, because a lot of them are coming to the tail ends of their career. And the morale, I've played golf in South Africa. They've had, you know, horrendous things in the past. I've played golf in Russia, I've played golf in China. I never once got any trouble for that. You know, I commentated it in Saudi before this whole thing took off. The European Tour brought the Saudis into the equation. So there was never an issue then. And now, because it upset the apple cart massively, they've turned it political. And the guys, to be fair to them, haven't been able to handle it, nor should they, because they're not politicians, they're professional sports people. And it will die down. And this tour, I don't know, will it take off? I watched a bit of the first one of Centurion. I tried to watch a bit of it last week, but obviously, you know, you look at that kind of tournament, they're trying to jazz it up, and then you look at the history and tradition of another brilliant Horizon Irish Open in Mount Juliet, and, you know, I think we're probably better off talking about that, really, than, you know, the LIV Tour, to be honest. There's been enough. You know, yeah. it's political football at the moment. I mean, if sports people are commentating on politics, it's never going to work, really.
Yeah, it's hard to have sympathy for somebody who says in the middle of an interview, you know, when £1 million went into my bank balance, nobody raised an eyebrow about that, but now it's such a big deal. Let's move...
But they didn't.
I know they didn't. But that's why I'm just saying that it's, you know, we know it's about the money, and if that was put across in a more clear way, that it wouldn't draw so much vitriol.
Yeah, but then if they all said that, they'd be all giving them grief for saying that. So,
well, he said that in the interview, and he said he can't say that because the LIV Tour organisers don't want him to say that either, too. So,
but we're in a world of where everyone's offended about the tiniest thing, and if you say the right thing, it's the wrong thing, and if you say the wrong thing, it's the wrong thing. So
Dustin Johnson, DJ, and say absolutely nothing.
Maybe so.
Yeah, maybe. That's...
You know, and then the other side of it is you've got all the journalists covering it. If they're that offended by the whole thing, why bother even cover the tournament at all? Just shut them out. Don't be at the event. Don't cover it. But, you know, they're there doing their job. They're getting paid to be there. There's no one giving the journalists any grief for it. So it's just so easy to be offended nowadays. And had they all sat there in Centurion and gone, well, this is the deal, I'm getting $40 million to be here, you know, who's going to turn that down? But you can't even say that anymore. So it was an impossible situation. But it is, from a golfing point of view, it has moved the landscape with the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour. It will make both those tours better in the long run. Guys will go, you know, the Ryder Cup is the Ryder Cup. It's a fantastic tournament, you know, but it's one tournament every 2 years. Can you, at the tail end of your career, you know, hang out for that, or can you become a captain and dine out on that? Probably not as well as you could if you went on another tour, because that's what it is. And I said it from the very start, the smartest thing they've done is tie in with the Asian Tour, and I think this LIV Tour will go to 72 hole events next year, and they probably will get world ranking points, and then, you know, that will make the alliance between the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour a stronger alliance. You know, we've got guys going over to play in the PGA Tour this week, opposite the Scottish Open. Obviously, it's unfortunate they're not all getting in there. But there's a massive change coming in golf. And I think the happening of this tour might actually make the other tours even stronger.
Okay, well, no doubt. We'll be talking about that a lot over the next while, Gary. Let's talk about you, though, because you did predict the winner of the Irish Open.
Yeah, I got lucky on the guessing, Marie.
You say that every week. You're actually just really good at looking at form. Like, just be honest.
Yeah, well, I think he's a, you know, and that's a story in itself. You know, we're talking about who's not going to be on the Ryder Cup team next year. Maybe this guy's going to be on it. And maybe we've got someone from Poland going to be your first ever Ryder Cup player. And that's, you know, this caption of growing the game. You know, all, and there was a fantastic photo online last night, all the stats guys on the European Tour, they're all Polish. There's about 40 of them at the back of the green with Maronka last night. You know, and that's just brilliant for the sport.
Yep.
Excuse me.
And another prediction from you as well, Gary, which is impressive. But tell us a little bit about Maronk, though, because he's not someone I was too familiar with before this began.
Well, he's a little bit of an Irish connection in the sense that Dermot Byrne, who's a renowned caddy on the European Tour for many, many years and did an amazing job with Leona Maguire. Dermot, when Maronk first came out on tour, Dermot had his bag. So I'm sure Dermot's experience is somewhere in the mix. Obviously, he's not with them now, and that happens with professional golf with changes. But we're dying to get some sort of an Irish connection to someone. But Dermot did help him out at the start of his career. He got through the Challenge Tour in 2019 to get his status in 2020. And then, obviously, with COVID and whatnot, it was a difficult time for him, but he kept his status. He almost won in Dubai this year. He was with Rory in the final group. And he's just building and improving the whole time. He had 6 top tens the season prior to winning the Horizon Irish Open yesterday. So it's a big, powerful guy. He's 6'5", hits it miles. And as we saw as he was coming in, he's got nerve to hold putts under pressure, which is a great attribute to have for any professional golfer. So it's really exciting talent coming through. There's been a lot of hype around the Danish twins, the Hogarth. So this is a new name and someone who I think will be around for a long time.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to following him as well. Gary, I'm going to leave you with a few text messages in. So it's a bit of a mix. What a terrible load of horse manure out of G-Mac's mouth. The money is what it's all about. He should just say that and nothing else. Kieran Trippier is still in the England squad, having signed for Newcastle, but no questions asked. And one texter wants to know if the lady presenter, which I presume is me, Gary, another station came in and offered me €1 million to stay. Would I go or would I stay? What do you reckon, Gary?
I'd say get a postcard.
Gary, thanks a million, and I will talk to you again soon, no doubt.
Thanks, Marie. Cheers.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. It's time to talk rugby. Shane Byrne is with me on the line. Shane, I had a very disappointing start to the weekend. Got up early Saturday morning, made the tea, sat down to watch Ireland and the All Blacks, and after 20 minutes, I was ready to get up and get out of there.
Yeah, well, look, it was very good at the start. It really was a tremendous way they got into the game, and the try that they scored, you know, it was really good play. It was as we played with them, the times we played them up in the Aviva and stuff like that. New Zealand didn't have much say in it, but then little creaks started to show. Our set piece wasn't where it should have been. We certainly didn't have the read of the ref, so the whistle was going against us, and New Zealand got into the game. They were very basic gaps in defence, was the pillar at the rooks, you know, mining those places, little chips over, and they exploited it. And the problem is with New Zealand, when you allow them to have the bulk of the ball, they're very good. And when you make an error, normally you might concede a lot of 50, 60 yards, but with them you concede points. And that's why they're so good at what they do. Very frustrating to watch, but so much of that game was Ireland not doing what they should have done.
So there's a fear that they're going to get better, and obviously Ireland need to get better, but if they get better and we only get a little bit better, then we could have a repeat of the situation next time out. So Shane, what are the key areas that Ireland need to improve on?
Well, like from our own point of view, set piece. We need the set piece to be better. There's absolutely no doubt about that. The scrum, I think, in fairness, the ref, I don't think, was reffing the scrum brilliantly. I don't think his call on particularly what's happening on Porter's side of the scrum was right. And but that's the way it goes. You have to just get on with that. So all in over, the line-outs was a mixture in between. There were a couple of throws by Sheehan that weren't great, but there were also calls that weren't good. But you got to hand them to New Zealand. They read the line-outs very, very well. So we'd want to, Paul O'Connell be very, very sure to be doing a lot of work on that. So we need to secure our own ball, not be giving away cheap ball. We didn't get our head around the ruck time at all either. New Zealand still get away with those tiny little things that they're absolutely brilliant at, but unfortunately the refs don't pull them up on. So all of these things have led to just a scenario where when Ireland got behind, they found it next to impossible to keep going. The plus points, there's very few plus points, as I said at the very start of the game. You know, that was excellent play. We had the majority of the ball, you know, but they stayed fighting. They stayed fighting right towards the end of the game. But yeah, you can stare down it. There was no doubt about it. New Zealand are going to get better. We need to improve a hell of a lot more. But it doesn't mean that it can't be done.
I was reading Donal Lenihan this morning, and his verdict was that Ireland are simply not powerful enough. Is that the case?
Well, like when you look at the game the way it was, Sevilla and stuff like that, and the ground that they made so easily against us, you would have to simply go, yes, it is a case. But then, you know, the results that we've had against them, we don't think that the likes of Caelan Dorris, you know, those guys, they never really featured. Jack Cohn did well when he came on. There's a lot better to come from Ireland. And the one thing, when you do lose to New Zealand, you want to have gone out and given it all. And we certainly did that. And there's the power play that they have, the not just in the way they carry the ball, but just as well as the way they play the game. Yes, it is a huge thing. And you have to nullify that if you want to have any chance of beating them.
Who would you start at 10?
Yeah, now there's a question. Well, look, we know that Ireland is best with Sexton at the helm. There's no doubt about that. But there's a right and wrong to it now. And we have the whole concussion story in it, and whether he passes his last HIA test or not. And then as well, Joey Carvey didn't do bad when he came on. And at some point, we do need him to really start you know, taking that 10 shirt and making it his own. Andy Farrell has put a lot of faith in him, keeping him there when his form hasn't been great. So, you know, is it something that you just take the step and you just start him and that's it in a massive, massive game, which it will be, and just give him his opportunity? Everybody's going to be watching this spot. I don't imagine Mack Hansen probably come back in. I don't imagine there'll be too many changes, maybe one in the back row, but you know, it is somewhere that there is a proper case to be had now that Joey Carr would be, you know, it wouldn't be a bad thing if he started looking forward. But then again, we do want to get that win on New Zealand soil, and there is no doubt about it, Johnny Sexton on form, that is currently Ireland play at their best when he is there. But, you know, maybe just this time, give him the third test, give Carberry this one, hopefully he starts to get that jersey, number 10 jersey, looking a bit more comfortable with it on his back.
Yeah, case for rip the band-aid off maybe and just get on with it. Shane Byrne, thank you so much. We will be talking to you again soon. Plenty of rugby coming up, and all of those remaining tests are on 2FM, so do please tune in. It's time to turn our attention now to football. Alan Cawley joins us on the line. Alan, how are things?
Evening, Marie. I'm good. How are you?
Sitting at home watching all the transfers unfolding, wondering what's happening at Manchester United, are you?
Well, that's the big question throughout the summer, Marie, isn't it? And finally, there's a bit of action.
So what are your thoughts? Okay, Christian Eriksen potentially looks like he is actually heading there now. He's agreed in principle. There is no Cristiano Ronaldo at training today. He said it is because of family issues. I'm not sure if I'm buying that. So far, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think any of us are buying that, to be fair, Marie, especially when the news broke over the weekend that he was looking to obviously get out and leave. I wonder, is that due to the fact that maybe he's had conversations with the manager and hasn't assured him of a starting place, which I don't think he can, to be fair. And I'd be of the view now, even though Ronaldo obviously did very well for them last year, we all know he's at the tail end of his career. And if this manager is coming in to make a fresh start, like we all know he is, and start from scratch, well, then I would be quite happy to let Ronaldo go and let him assemble his own squad with his own players and try and go from there. So I'd have no issues whatsoever. If he wants to leave, let him leave.
And it looks like Terrell Malalcia is going to join as well. I'll have to get the pronunciation of his name right if he does join, because no doubt we'll be talking about him a lot as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's a good signing as well. Potentially he could be very, very good, Marie. But you mentioned Eriksen also. You'd like to think that this will kickstart them into, because we've all seen over the last number of weeks the trouble that they've had in just trying to get players over the line, and the messing around with obviously the De Jong transfer. But you'd like to think that this could kickstart them now if other players see the likes of an Eriksen going to United as well. And I think on a free transfer, it's a no-brainer. Of course, there was concerns about Eriksen over his health after what we all witnessed sadly there a couple of years back. But I think he's proved all that wrong now, and just proved that he's back to full fitness after his little stint with Brentford. And obviously there was talk of maybe him go back to Spurs as well, but United were in the mix. But I think Christian Eriksen, for obviously on a free transfer, I think that's great business for Man United. I know the wages might be big, but I have no problem with that, because he's a top quality player, Christian Eriksen. And as I say, if other players who may be kind of second guessing whether they'll go to Man United at the moment see the likes of him signing, I think it could kickstart others into action as well.
Yeah, and then at Manchester City, Calvin Phillips is in and Gabriel Jesus is out. Oh, I think I've lost Alan now.
Can you hear me?
Oh,
sorry,
yeah,
Marie.
You're back.
Calvin Phillips. I think that's good business from City as well. Obviously, a brilliant young up-and-coming England international. They have Rodri there at the moment, but I think it's more because, as we all know, and we've had many conversations about Man City and Liverpool, the strength and depth that the squads have. And if you're firing on all fronts like we've seen with both of those clubs towards the end of last year, you need like-for-like replacements, no matter where, what position it is on the pitch. So I think that's probably to replace the likes of Fernandinho, because I still think he'll have Rodri as his number one. But you could also be in a situation where Rodri and Phillips could play alongside each other in certain games as well, as two deep-lying midfielders. So I think that's really good business for Man City. Of course, off the back of the Haaland one as well, Maria, it just goes to show, like, they've just won the league and they've just got out and signed two of the best young players in European football. So they're not going to get any weaker. I think the Liverpool news with Salah as well is great news for them also. So certainly those clubs will be very much as strong as what we've seen last year. It's just up to the other clubs to see, can they bring in the quality that maybe kind of pushed them towards challenging next year.
It's all action here at home as well. Danny Mandrew is heading for Lincoln. He's going to be a huge loss for Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, it's a surprise one, Marie, really, because obviously Mandrew, when he signed with Shamrock Rovers, I always felt that potentially he's the one that could go back across the water to maybe a championship club, or who knows, possibly a Premier Division club if he was to develop at the rate that he was going. And he was very good for Shamrock Rovers last year. In my opinion, he's probably the best player in the league in terms of the potential that he has as well. But to see him go and sign with Lincoln, I'm not sure if it's the best move for him. And obviously the manager was linked with Lincoln, Stephen Bradley, earlier in the season, turned it down. I think it's a good move in the sense that he's going back across the water, and I always felt he would. But I'm surprised that he's going to Lincoln, to be honest with you, Marie. And maybe I felt he might have stuck around, obviously, with Europe and the big game tomorrow night as well. And it looks like Shamrock Rovers will have a good stab at obviously trying to progress in Europe this year, and of course to have the potential to do that. I thought Mandrell may have stayed around, performed at that level on that stage in European football, and who knows who would have been kind of chasing him. But it surprised me a little bit that he's gone to Lincoln.
Yeah, and Dara Burns has joined the League One side MK Dons as well, so there's a lot of players moving.
Yeah, and I think it's a good move for Dara Burns. His form hasn't been as good this year, but I think this was always in the pipeline because of how good he was last year. And I think my MK Dons have been chasing him for quite a while. I watched him last week, and as I say, he wasn't up to the standard as what he has been. But I think that's because, to be fair to the young lad, his head was a little bit turned over the last few weeks, and there was kind of to and froing with the clubs to see exactly where he would end up. And I think when he knew of the strong interest from MK Dons, his head was turned that he wanted to get out. So I'd say that's exactly why his form probably dipped a little bit in the last few weeks. So he'll be delighted to get out over the line. I think he's a very good young player. Again, huge potential. But there's areas he needs to improve on. I think Mandrea would be very much ahead of him in terms of going straight into the League One club and performing at that level. I think Dara Burns still has a bit of work to maybe get up to that level. But it's a good move for him.
Okay, Alan Colley, thanks so much for joining me. I see John Hustis is gone as well from Stephen Kenny's setup. At this stage, you could nearly get a gig there.
That's what I'm working towards.
Keep going with those under nines.
Get the gig there, never mind me.
Right, Alan.
I keep going the way I'm going. That's where I'll end up.
Totally, me too. Right, I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Alan. That's all we have time for this evening, but do stay tuned. Tara Kumar is up next.